Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. There is no doubt that today's new technology, our digital world, has changed our lives. We use it to communicate on personal and public levels for entertainment and education and to make daily tasks easier. But while we know what it can do for us or what can or does it do to us, it's a question that our next guest will help us answer. Sister Marisha Weber is a clinical instructor at Washington University School of Medicine and director of the Office of Consecrated Life for the Archdiocese of St. Louis. Since last March, she has been running a series of workshops titled Why Johnny Can't Put His Cell Phone Down. It's been covering a broad range of subjects, including the effects of today's technology on brain development.
Thank you very much for your invitation to come today. And I happen to be invited on the 25th anniversary of the launching of the World Wide Web.
Really? Today is the anniversary?
Well, August 23rd. It's been 25 years. And I'm a physician who trained at the Mayo Clinic, and I'm board certified in psychiatry and neurology and worked in our clinic in Alma, Michigan, where our sisters are. And I found myself seeing a big difference in patients who were coming after two and a half decades since the launching of the World Wide Web with behaviors that we just didn't anticipate.
Such as?
Well, several things. There is now an addiction that didn't exist in teenagers before. There's an addiction also in adults to the online gaming and sometimes internet pornography. As psychiatrists, we did not think in terms of an addiction being triggered by something that was brought into the eyes. Hmm. Initially, it was, you know, something you would drink, like alcohol or chemicals. So that was a surprise. Also, learning styles, the nonverbal skills, because so many kids prefer to text instead of talk one-on-one. So that's another change, the interpersonal dynamics. Hmm. And even the focus of how they look, like Instagram was a big media that has persons post pictures of themselves and then become anxious if they don't look good enough, or apps that you say hot or not. And, you know, these kinds of things weren't in existence before 25 years ago. It's also affected the developing brain, rewiring it. That was the biggest surprise, I think.
Yeah, let me just back up one second, because you've used the word addiction now several times. There are a lot of people who say, well, that's probably not the right word to use, but you seem fairly convinced that addiction is the proper word.
The persons in China, as well as in Tokyo, are using the word. In America, we're not formally diagnosing it as an addiction. Also, there's now in the what is called the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, the fifth edition, the latest edition, they have chosen to put in internet gaming disorder as a study, because they're finding especially young people becoming so obsessed with playing online games, with withdrawal, with a need to get more exciting games, that have the same kinds of symptoms that we see with substance dependence.
Is it different between young people and older people, adults?
You bring up a good point here, and I'd like to maybe say a little bit about the neurophysiology here. In the developing brain, we have what is in the center of the brain. It's called the reward center. And then in the front of the brain, behind the forehead, is called the prefrontal lobe. Mm-hmm. Now, when we are young and developing, it's more the pleasure center that gets stimulated. That's where we function most. And then over time, we begin then to connect more with the prefrontal lobe. The prefrontal lobe has to do with judging, reasoning,
risk-taking.
Mm-hmm. Making a choice between something that's harmful or helpful, for example. But we need to walk that path. An example that comes to mind was, I was in Michigan. Michigan State University put up a new building, and they didn't lay down the sidewalks until they allowed the students to walk across the ground to the building and then they lay down the sidewalks. So our brain works the same way. If we walk a path, we begin to develop a path. So our brain is made up of about a million different cells that have almost a trillion, you know, interconnections, is what the scientists are saying. But the more we walk a path, the more we send messages to certain areas of the brain, the more then that path is strengthened and becomes more efficient. With this passive reception of data that's coming through our eyes and our ears that we may not reflect upon, then we're not necessarily taking it to a choice that we're making that would be at the frontal lobe.
Is this why it's being recommended now that children under the age of 2 not be exposed to screens at all, or on a very limited basis?
On a limited basis, yeah. Yes. Because it's, some studies are suggesting that it's inhibiting the verbal skills because they're not interacting face to face. Texting is the most popular way for kids to communicate today. You know, they can send 100 texts a day. The 15% of them send 100 texts a day, and a smaller percentage said more than several hundred a day. So what's happening is they're not learning turn-taking. They're not learning conversational skills. They're less attentive to eye contact, tone of voice, body posture. And those kinds of things have affected their human interaction skills. And that's why with young children, where the brain is the most malleable, it's recommended that you allow them to interface with someone face-to-face, literally, in order to develop those language skills and those bonding skills as well.
Sure. This technology, however, is not going to go away.
No.
I mean, we'll have to certainly concede that. So what do we do about this problem of encouraging and enhancing, you know, interpersonal relationships?
I think the first thing that we need to do is to educate. I think if we don't know some of the very positive effects of electronic media, which are many, and know some of the negative effects, then it'll be harder to educate our children as well as educate parents. And this is why I've chosen to do a series like this to offer to parents, kids, teachers, persons of all walks of life, an opportunity to become more educated so that they can then make choices in their own family settings about this.
Can you give me some sense of how you're doing that, of what the pitch is from Sister Marcia?
Yes. Well, I first start out with basically the neurophysiology, you know, educating how the brain works, and then point out some statistics. Did you know that about 60% of adults have a smartphone today?
I thought it was more.
While 75% of teenagers have a smartphone today, and that's the latest Gallup study. 91% have a mobile phone, 91% of adults, but 61% have a smartphone, who are adults. So what we're seeing is there's a teenage population that is having a higher percentage of smartphones available to them than even the adult population. So what are we doing now? And it also says that whether you're a teenager or an adult, about 12% of them are checking their cell phone every couple of minutes. You know, now there's the phantom buzz where you think your phone might be going off, or you're trying to check it to see, you know, what might be going on. And that's how you kind of become preoccupied. And this is where dopamine comes in. You know, a simple example is even to consider with emails, although you see it much more with Facebook and some of these other apps. But if you get an email and it's a, you know, you get an email and your son got straight A's, you know, you're kind of excited about that. Then you get a couple of boring emails. Then you get another email that your winning lottery ticket was found at the dry cleaners or something. Then, you know, there's a little bit of an arousal. So it's a spritz of dopamine, which is called the pleasure hormone, is released. So there's something about it being intermittent, positive response that makes you want to check again, check again. That's the basis of the addiction of gambling. So that's something that we're becoming much more aware of, that we weren't as aware of before. Do you remember your high school psychology class where we talked about operant conditioning and Pavlov's dogs, where Pavlov put food down for the dog and then rang the bell, and then put food down and rang the bell, and then after a time only rang the bell, but the dog salivated without the food being put down. So they have connected a bell with food coming. So we have connected a tweet with, you know, maybe a message coming. Things that are not related now are triggering our desire to check. And it's that pleasure center that gets stimulated. But too much can also cause anxiety, can cause depression. And we're seeing, because of the addictive quality, kind of a withdrawal or a tolerance to some of these things.
Too much, or I suppose too little, could create a series of problems as well.
Too little, if you've become more obsessed by it or preoccupied by it, there you get a craving. So we're seeing now a withdrawal symptom, and we see this in the brain. There are functional MRIs that are available. This is a study that was done in Tokyo where they looked at college students accessing the internet to play online games, and they have found higher activity in the pleasure center. And over time, because these kids now in college used when they were just growing up, and some shrinkage in the frontal lobe because it's not as well accessed.
You know, pardon me, but I find it hard to really imagine or believe that this can be changed even by education. I mean, simply because there is so much pressure, as you've indicated, to be a participant in this world.
Well, I'd like to think, and have also seen studies where individuals are taking a pause to look at this. One example that came to mind, this is why I think education is so important. A friend of mine is a philosopher, teaches at a university, and she then met her colleague who had just had a child about a year ago. And so this child came, and she had good interactions with the child and was delighted to see this child. This child came back 9 months later with her father to see my friend again. But this time, this child, now 2 years old, had some kind of gadget toy. And so my friend was trying to engage the child, and she wasn't interested. She wasn't interested. And this so bothered my friend, she called me up. And I said to her, well, why don't you say something to the parent? And so she did. She said, did you notice that your child was less interactive with me? And that gave them pause. And so now they're really working to engage the child more in one-on-one interactions at home. And it's begin to modify their home life. And I think that's what's so important with regards to how we can work with some of these things.
But, you know, it seems to me that we're moving in an entirely different direction. Now we're talking about virtual reality and augmented reality where, you know, they'll be wearing devices.
Yes.
And sticking the cell phone in the pocket. I mean, this is going to take them even farther away from where we are right now.
So I think that's why it's important for persons to be educated about this. You know, now, because of what you're saying, there are filters that limit the kind of internet access that a child can have, also limit the amount of time that they are actually online, and the times that they can access. I recommend to individuals that they don't have any kind of screen time during meals, or take their cell phones to their bedrooms, or during time of quiet. And a lot of what is going to help turn this around is to do the things we used to do before internet became available, like go on a hike together, or I suggest to parents that they actually have their child help them maybe set the table or cut up vegetables. Now, surely it'll delay the time because it might take a little longer, but it's a way to interact with them and get them to engage.
If we don't do this, if this does not happen, and I'm very skeptical, sister, forgive me, taking a cell phone away from a kid or not allowing them to have a television in their room or whatever is a difficult thing to do. If we aren't successful, what then? Where are we going? Where is it taking us?
That's the thing that we can't quite answer now.
Yeah.
You know, the internet is a marvelous tool. It has increased our capacity to communicate. We can access, you know, libraries worldwide. We can use Facebook to connect with a relative on the other side of the world. So it has been helpful in many ways. And yet, when not used with a reflective purpose to help enhance our communication, we are at risk of making the internet a connection of wires and not a connection of people. And I think that's very, very important for us to really take to heart.
I heard the Diane Rehm show the other day. They had a guest on who was identified as a cyber psychologist, which I guess is a relatively new field. And one of the questions was, well, we have parental controls now, and parents can control the things that their kids can have access to. And she said, the kids know how to work around this stuff. They go and Google bypassing parental controls, and there it is.
It's so true. It is so true. Yeah. They know how to bypass some of these things. Yeah. That's why we've got to start young. Yeah. And even if you have older kids, and how do you model the behavior yourself as a parent? How do you really get educated to some of the effects that you didn't intend, were not aware were going to happen, and address them?
Well, that's certainly an important thing that has to be done. I'm interested again in the brain development of the young versus the older brain, and these problems then don't exist in the older. The brain is still being developed until a young person is in the early 20s,
I think,
something like that.
Exactly.
Okay, then it's developed. Then do we not have to worry so much about these paths that you're talking about?
Well, not quite, because we have learned that the brain has a tremendous capacity for what is called neuroplasticity. So it does and can change. So even though somebody is no longer a child or a teenager when first accessing this electronic media, the brain will begin to modify itself. You know, what wires together fires together. There is a greater possibility to go back to a baseline, because individuals who were born before electronic media was in existence has that more baseline of human interactions built into their pathways, but they can and have. There's been unquestionable studies that has been modified. So they do rewire their brain even at an older age. We see that with the addictions of online gaming. The greatest number of individuals of a climbing age of those who play online games are in their 30s now, mostly men. And so that was a bit of a surprise. And there are individuals who suffer with internet pornography addiction, and certainly that runs the gamut of ages, although they have found that those who are older, if they don't access anymore and work on purifying their memory and imagination, become free of the images that keep bubbling up faster than somebody who is a young person because of that malleability.
Would you envision a time in which this might be dealt with chemically? I mean, you mentioned dopamine and the influence that has. I know that people with Parkinson's disease, dopamine is an issue that it is dealt with chemically. Is that where we're going?
Well, I've simplified it because the neurochemistry is complicated, but there are other chemicals. There's acetylcholine, there's the neuropeptides, there's a variety of chemicals, which I won't get into at this time. But because it is overstimulating those parts of the brain, we do know that for some individuals, it's caused increased anxiety. Can you imagine stimulating the pleasure center? And then that overstimulation out of an exhaustion can create some mood disorders like depression. So antidepressants and anti-anxiety medications are actually used for some of these individuals who have called themselves obsessed or addicted. And I'm not attached to a word, but more looking at the behaviors and how to help individuals who are suffering in these ways and now have become aware of it.
How are you? You live in two different worlds, obviously. How do you connect the dots between your religious work and your secular work?
Well, I have the gift of having a wonderful education, like I said, and as a religious sister, I'm a religious sister of Mercy of Alma, Michigan, and many of our sisters are educated to a degree to be able to offer their services. So in our community, there are probably about 12 physicians. We have several attorneys, and several sisters who have their doctorates and teach in a variety of universities. Mm-hmm. And so we use our education to really be of service. And as a religious woman, we highly value the dignity of the human person. So in the work that I do, would want to be able to bear witness to that, to educate those who might not have that available to them, as well as to provide services or work with different ministries or different groups that have the means so that some of these things could be addressed and offered where appropriate.
Our time is winding down, about a minute and a half left, but I saw something in reference to you, and I think this might have come from you. From the billions of images on the internet, will the image of Christ emerge? I think that's a December workshop that you're holding is the title of it, right?
Yes, yes.
Well, you want to just explain that?
Sure. That comes from St. John Paul II and one of his documents. And Christ came to the world to bear witness to the dignity of the human person. And we are created to love and be loved and to know and be known. And that's the great desire. It's all about relationship. And that's what we hope to enhance and not decline in.
Do you have concerns that the internet and this digital world will pull people away from the religious world?
It could, although there could be other reasons why that would occur. It also could bring them to the religious world. I know that there is a parish even in St. Louis where Pokemon Go has become popular. And so they've had some kids come to the church to play this game and then, you know, get access to, you know, some of the activities at the church. So, again, it depends what the motivation is, I think.
If you can't beat them, join them. I guess that's the that's the lesson there, huh? Well, you do have some more workshops coming up.
Yes.
The remainder of the year. Very quickly, if you can just give us a sense, we'll put all of the information on our website.
Thank you. Well, I'm giving these at St. Gerard Magella Parish, which is on Doherty Ferry Road in Kirkwood. And my next presentation is on September 17th. There's another one on November 12th, and then another one on December 3rd. The one on September 17th will be online gaming, and then I'll do a little bit more on other topics in the last two.
Fascinating subject. I want to thank you so much for being with us. I'm sure you'll have a big turnout. And again, we'll put all of that information on our website. Sister Marisha Weber, thank you so much. Fascinating stuff.
Thank you very much, Don. Pleasure to be with you.
Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWNU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.